Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Welcome to Four Down Territory. As Stink and Mike take a look at the four biggest stories in Denver sports. Here's Schlereth and Evans kicking it off with First Down.
Stink will be joining us at 7:30. Orlando Franklin sitting in right now. Thank you, Big O, for getting up early as we take a look back at the Avalanche losing last night to the Flyers. Another injury for Jared Bednar's team. Nathan MacKinnon going down, severity of his upper body injury unknown.
I thought our guys played hard. I mean, you know, like, Ewing makes some mistakes, and they seem to capitalize on them tonight. The conscience of our team was good. It's going to be tough to score goals, you know, so you don't want to be giving up easy ones. And I thought Gorgie didn't have his best night, probably. I'd like to see him come up with one or two of those, and their goalie was really good, so it ends up being the difference in the hockey game.
Orlando, let's talk about injuries, because the Broncos have not been given a pass this year with all the injuries they've gone through. So,
yeah.
Should the Avalanche face the same kind of scrutiny? Hey, where's the idea of next man up? Where's this? Where's your farm system? Why aren't you finding guys to step up? Why are you struggling without your key guys?
Yeah, so two things about this. One point that you brought up, the fact of in the NHL, there's 82 games versus the NFL only being 17. 17 games, not a lot. Once a week, right? Every one of those things matter. Every one of those things count. In the NHL, it's a little bit different of an animal. But another thing that I believe is the biggest outlier, when you look at football and the football season starting, come April, that whole entire football team is together, right? It's the next man up is in the building, has been here usually since April. When you look at hockey, when you look at basketball, the next man up, it's coming from a different team, hasn't been in the building, hasn't even skated with these guys, hasn't been, you know, day to day, you know, walking into that building. And there is going to be a little bit more of a drop off because of that. So when you look at football being 100% injury as well, so you're planning on losing guys. You have to have a plan for every single person. Or hockey's not a 100% injury, so it's a different approach also. So you look at a bunch of different factors. And like it or not, you could say the Avalanche, you know, playing late last year, you know, everybody gets a day with the cup. Maybe that's why they're injured, didn't approach the season the right way. With the Broncos, you could say, you know, Lauren Lando is the problem. You could say, you know what, it's Nathaniel Hackett and how he goes about it. And you could say that there's just some freak accidents. Like it or not, there has been a lot of injuries. But with football, it's always the next man up is never usually nowhere near as good as the guy that was there. And it's a noticeable drop off, where hockey tends, that doesn't tend to be the case in hockey. And you're kind of able to gravitate and surround a guy. And like you said, game, like I said earlier, the games are not as important as in the NFL.
Yeah. With hockey, you literally can say, hey, look, just tread water for the next 2 months, you know, and get guys back. And you still have plenty of time to make your push, get in the playoffs, and then nobody's going to want to play you. You don't have that kind of luxury when it comes to the NFL. Next and four down.
Second down.
Deion Sanders adding to his coaching staff.
My calling is for young men, young women, and people of all walks of life, all social climates, and all ethnicities. That's my calling. My calling is not built on a location. It's built on a destination. Now, that was good. You're supposed to clap for that. Darn it, that was good. You give some of my good stuff. We just getting started. I already went in the bag, baby. Let's go.
And Deion Sanders press conferences are just going to be must listen to throughout the entire season. After having to listen to Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson every week, I'm looking forward to some prime. The coaching staff is starting to be filled out for Deion Sanders up at CU. Willie Taggart, the former Florida State head coach, coming aboard. Sean Lewis, current head coach at Kent State, walking away from being a head coach to be the offensive coordinator. How about this one? This one's kind of interesting. A couple of Viking connections. Mike Zimmer rumored to be in the running as defensive coordinator.
Mm. Love it.
He was coach of the Vikings last year.
Yeah, love it. Love the staff that Deion's assembling. That's going to help out recruiting-wise tremendously. You know, when you walk into an 18-year-old living room and it's Mike Zimmer, right? A guy that has so much experience, has been in the NFL for so many years. You know, you're telling these kids and selling them on, hey, you come with us. We're going to get you here. I know what it takes to play at that next level. So I love how he's assembling this coaching staff. I think CU is going to be great for it. But Mike, my big thing is, you know, are they getting, I know that they have changed some of the transfer issues that, as far as just the stipulations or, you know, the rules and transferring in. But have they changed the fact with assistant coaches up there at CU? Because before, they were only allowed to sign one-year deals.
Yeah.
So I guess that must be changing as well.
I would assume
behind
so.
The scenes for some of these big-name coaches, and especially guys walking away from head coaching jobs already in college football.
No, there's no doubt that they have eased restrictions and guidelines there to try to get and be able to compete with the big boys. And good for them. It's been a long time coming. Next and four down.
Third down.
So Nathaniel Hackett decided a different approach for the offense Sunday against the Ravens. Went with a little bit more small ball.
We definitely went in wanting to run the ball. I don't think we ever go in with the mindset of wanting to win and not score a lot of points. I think that we've been efficient in some of our bigger packages, whether it be 12, 21 when Beck was there. And our 13 package has been very efficient also, with Dulcich playing a little bit more of a wide receiver role.
I wouldn't say anything you've done, Coach, has been very efficient. I would come up with a different choice of words. But to you experts out there, you former NFL guys, you Mark Schlereth, you Orlando Franklins, you Derek Wolfs and everybody, you kept saying, hey, you got to simplify things. Put Russ back under center. Less wide receivers out in the pattern. More tight ends. They did all that the other day, and it was still awful offensive football. So what do you guys have to say now?
Yeah, so for me, I've always been a fan of the Broncos just saying, hey, you know what? We're going to go to more of a quick game. We're going to go to a three-step drop. We're going to allow this offensive line to now change it up, right? Allow Cam Fleming, allow Calvin Anderson to be able to cut these defensive ends where we know that come hell or high water, Russell Wilson's going to get the ball out on his third step right now. So they could have these different tools and slow the defensive linemen down. We're still not doing that here. Or still a predictable offense as well. When Montrell Washington gets out there, he's getting the ball. So when you're predictable and you don't give this, you don't allow these offensive linemen to cut guys or to, you know, call it up and run it, quick passing game, you guys can go get after these people. You don't have to retreat and let them get after you. You're going to be in quicksand all day. You're going to be behind the eight ball, and people are going to get after you. You're never going to be able to take the fight to them, and you're going to be catching guys. Unfortunately. So, yeah, it was a nicer game plan, but like, let's help out the offensive line so Russell Wilson now feels a little bit more comfortable back there, because clearly he looks like he's not comfortable.
Next and four down.
One, two, three. Fourth down.
So the Nuggets are home tonight against Dallas. Looking forward to this after a couple of bad road games in which we did not see much defense from Michael Malone's team and not much from the bench.
You know, the bottom line is that unit has struggled most of the year, and I take responsibility for that, not finding a way to get those guys to play together, to play the right way, and most importantly, just to have some success so we don't have to keep going back to our bench early in the second quarter, early in the fourth quarter. And so, again, I'll take the hit on that one, because after 23 games, it continues to be a huge issue.
Oh, I'm going to throw this out there, and I think it's something that we ought to start paying attention to. After a couple of real lackadaisical road losses, I think we got to begin the Malone watch. We have seen this in sports, plenty of sports, especially in the NBA and NHL. Coaches' messages get stale.
Yes.
And there's no more of a players' league than the NBA. And once a team has decided that they're kind of tuning out the coach, you got to make a change. So yeah. I'm not going, you know, James Merrillat, Teflon Malone. I'm just saying I think it bears watching to see how this team responds beginning tonight against Dallas.
Yeah, Mike, I'm right there with you, and I'm glad that you took it there, because I was getting ready to make the point. 23 games.
Yeah.
That's a good sample size.
We're a quarter of the way through the season now.
But also, we've been hearing this for the last couple of years, the exact same thing. Yeah, the players have changed, but we've been hearing the exact same message. So, coach, get it done. Because right now, we talked about going into this season, this Western Conference championship or bust. And now if you don't make it there and you have a healthy basketball team, you will be on that, underneath that microscope. So I'm glad that you put him under the microscope here on Tuesday, December 6th, Mike, at 7:10 a.m. because rightfully so. Coach's message has been the same the last couple years,
yeah,
and I'm starting to get a little pissed off hearing the same thing all the time.
Yeah, something's not clicking right now. Coming up, that'll do it for Four Down Territory. Coming up, Mike Kliss, our 9 News Bronco insider, joins us. Why weren't the Broncos interested in getting themselves a Hall of Fame 5 quarterback? That's next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Mike Kliss, our 9 News Bronco insider, joins us right now, along with Orlando Franklin, sitting in for Stink. He'll be joining us coming up at 7:30. He is presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Mike, why weren't the Broncos more interested in signing Baker Mayfield?
Well, he's on waivers right now, and they're number 3 on the priority list. I don't think, they're not going to put a claim in on Baker Mayfield. And that's, there's several reasons here. One, you got 5 games left in the season. If you claim him on waivers, you have to pick up the rest of his contract, which is $1.35 million. And, by the time he gets the, and then he's a free agent after this season. So, and given the fact that Russell Wilson is here with the Broncos and is under contract guaranteed for 3 more years after this one, Baker's not going to sign here. You know, he's going to try to go to a place where he has a better chance of becoming the number 1 quarterback. So for $13.5 million, he would be a backup, and, would take him a couple weeks. It would take him a couple weeks to get the playbook before he could even go in and take a snap. It just doesn't make sense. And so they brought in a younger kid, Jarrett Garantano, for the practice squad, and Brett Rippon will remain the backup. I do think the Broncos will, Rippon's done after this year as far as contract goes. I think the Broncos will try to bring in a backup. They might even, use one of their top picks on a quarterback this year. It's probably 1 year away before they make a real serious move toward a quarterback. But, and then if Baker clears waivers, which I think he will, unless the 49ers take him, I think he would look at other options in free agency other than the Broncos.
Yeah. Mike, how was the locker room after this week's loss? Defense holding that team to 10 points, but they did have that collapse with about 5 minutes and 20 seconds left and, giving up those 2 fourth downs and Singleton getting a penalty and, PS2 getting a penalty, Kareem Jackson missing a tackle. But this offense, yet again, another week, no touchdowns, only 9 points. So how was that locker room feel after the game?
They've had a lot of close games this year and some where they lost late. They've lost 3 overtime games. But this one was more of a gut punch. They had the game. The offense missed a chance to put it away after the long completion to Dulcich to midfield, past midfield, and then from there, 3 downs, and they had to punt. When 1 more first down, 1 more field goal, they had it. The defense, I think the real crucial killer there was that 4th and 1.5 when Andrew shifted in, took the snap. Looked like they had them stopped at the, Ravens' 18-19 yard line with 4:20 to go. You hold them there, it looked for a moment like they did, and they could have put the game away there. There were so many chances for them to put that game away. That was the to me, that was the most heartbreaking of their losses So it was really somber, quiet. You know, there wasn't sometimes after a loss, you know, half hour, 40 minutes after the game, you see some smiles and you see a little laugh. Somebody will crack a joke and there'll be a little bit of laughter. There was none of that in the locker room after the game, you know, in Baltimore.
Mike, we got about 45 seconds. It seems like after every loss, fans are like, this is the week that Nathaniel Hackett will get fired. I just don't think it's going to happen during the season. Do you?
Well, they don't want to, that's for sure. And that's pretty evident. I think in the last 30, 40 years, it's only happened once that a coach didn't finish his first year, and that was Urban Meyer for conduct reasons, not performance reasons, last year. So I think they definitely do not. But when you're 3-9, you're on a week-to-week basis. You know, I don't think you can get blown out consecutive weeks and expect to finish the season. But, they want to wait and evaluate the full body of work. I think we all know where this is headed at season's end. But I do think they want to, if they can, you know, unless there's a real revolt from the fan base, I think they want to try to get to the end.
All right, Mike, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike.
You got it.
Mike Kliss, our 9 News Bronco Insider, joining us courtesy of Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Orlando, you have been released.
Yeah.
All right, you are free to go. Thank you so much. Great job. We'll see you back here in an hour and a half with the Players Club. Stink joins us coming up next, right in time for What's Trending.
Snapshot presented by Shomp BMW. One price, one person, 1 hour.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with What's Trending right now.
Tom freaking Brady. Jeez. Just when you think that guy looks washed, and man, for about 57 minutes last night, he looked washed. But man, the Saints left the door open just enough, and Tommy did it! Tommy did
We're
it!
Still here!
Tommy did it! 2 touchdown passes in the final 3 minutes.
I love Tom Brady!
And the Bucks beat the Saints 17-16. And along the way, passed Peyton Manning for most fourth quarter comebacks. I was watching the Manning cast for the final couple minutes of that one. And man, you watching Peyton, this guy loves football. It loves football. I can understand because he was like, no, he wasn't there to have fun at that moment. He wasn't looking to crack jokes or bust on Eli. He was just completely, completely immersed in that game and the strategy and the plays and what Tom was going to do. It was fun to watch. And it was a reminder that, yeah, at some point, I think Peyton Manning does want to get involved in running a football team. I know James Merrillat was writing at DenverFan.com that the Broncos need to do their Deion Sanders prime moment, that Greg Penner needs to make an offer to Peyton Manning. We had Orlando Franklin in for the first half of the show, and Orlando's like, no, I know Peyton. I'm working with Peyton. I'm working with coaching his kid. He has no interest in doing anything like that for the foreseeable future. Next 5, 6, 7 years. He wants to be around his family. He wants to coach up his kid. So it sounds good. I would love to do it. I've never been against the idea of Peyton Manning taking over and running the Broncos, Stink. But I think it always comes back for me. I can see why the Broncos would want to do it. I just don't see why Peyton would want to do it right now. Sorry, I made the transition from Brady to Peyton. But if you want to wax poetic about your man crush, Tom Brady, go ahead.
I love Tom Brady. He's the world's greatest American. And what he did last night was just another, you know, it's almost Tebow-esque where you can play like garbage for 55 minutes and then all of a sudden there's a certain Tebow-esque nature to what he did. I mean, dude, how about just nobody wants to win the NFC South. Even the Broncos would still be technically in it,
yes,
if they played in the NFC
yes,
South.
Yes, they would. They'd be mathematically alive.
Plus,
sure.
9 to 16 points a weekend is good enough to win that division.
Wow.
It was fun to watch. It's amazing how Brady in those moments he can look like crap,
dude. I'll tell you what happened. I sent my producer for FS1 of the Carton Show with like 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I can't keep my eyes open, and they're up 16-3. And I texted the producer and said, "It's a wrap. The Saints are winning the NFC South." And I literally sent the text, fell asleep, woke up, the TV was still on, and Tom Brady was up at the podium with the win. And I texted him. So it's literally, you know, it's 6 minutes or 7 minutes left in the game. So it's literally 30, 40 minutes later, right? As the time goes. And I texted him back with a never mind text on that, like on the NFC, the Saints winning the NFC South. Never mind. That's not that. Obviously, that didn't happen. This is what happens in the NFC South when you fall asleep.
Don't fall asleep. That's the lesson. Our buddy Joel Klatt, who we will have on tomorrow, will talk much more at length about Deion Sanders coming to see you. But Joel doing a podcast yesterday for Fox College Football had this to say about Deion coming to Boulder.
I could not be more excited for this hire. Colorado, the program that I love, that I watched win national championships, that I watched have Heisman Trophy winners and Thorpe Award winners and Buckus Award winners. This storied program from my youth had fallen on some of the hardest times of any program in the country. You could make an argument that they had the worst Power 5 roster in America this year. I mean, it was not good at all. And now, in the course of one afternoon, the most relevant program in the country is Colorado.
The most relevant? It's pretty bold. I don't know if they're the most relevant now.
No, well, they were just the most talked about for, 48 hours or whatever. But I will say this. From a recruiting standpoint and just what has happened at CU, what has happened in Boulder right now, what an amazing hire. It's just incredible what they've done.
Well, we'll have Joel on tomorrow. We'll be able to talk a lot more about it in depth. He'll join us at about 8 to 10. Drew Brees is in some trouble, and justifiably so. So that whole thing about him getting struck by lightning last week, we were on the air when that story came down, and we were all worried, and is he okay? And, we were able to get some confirmation that somebody reached out and said, texted him, he's okay. Well, it turns out this was all a stunt, and at the time we said, boy, I hope this is not just a case of the betting service that he's working with, a cheap publicity stunt. Turns out it was exactly that, and he played along with it to the point that he talked about this betting service offering lightning bets, and that he was filming part of this commercial, and in it he's in the back of an ambulance, and he looks all like he's been hit by lightning, there's like soot marks on his face and his hair's kind of standing up, and he's like, oh man, I gotta tell you right now, I'm feeling kind of buzzed. And he talked about the lightning bets that are available. And he's facing a lawsuit now from lightning strike survivors. Bad look for Drew Brees. Bad look. I thought he'd ever do.
Right. That is a bad look. But come on. Lightning strike survivors are now going to line up to sue. That just seems a little extreme to me. Does that not seem a little like goofy? Like, let's get a class action suit against Drew Brees because I was struck by get over it. That part is what Drew Brees did was reprehensible, stupid, whatever. But come on, really? That's where we're at right now. I don't know. This just seems a little that seems a little bit iffy to me, Mike.
Well, it is a bad look for Drew though, and for somebody who has always carried himself in a In a good way, a very positive way, it's not a good look. So how about this? Your guy, Justin Verlander, chose the New York Mets offer over the New York Yankees offer.
and leave it to his wife, Kate Upton, who has long been a Yankee fan, to throw shade at the Yankees after the deal by saying, we wanted to go to the New York team where they don't boo their players in the playoffs. So Aaron Judge, after a historic season, was booed by Yankee fans after a poor showing in the playoff series against Houston. And Kate Upton saying, nope, we're going to go to the New York team where they don't boo.
Yeah,
how about
well,
that?
They don't. Yeah, because they don't go to the playoffs. They did last year, though, right?
Right.
But they don't win anything. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to boo them when they're not winning anything. Kate Upton, stop it. Hey, how about Justin Verlander? He's 40, or going to be 40 years old. Two-year, $86.6 million, $43.3 million per season.
Great cash, homie.
Dude, seriously. Baseball.
Hey, man. Yeah. It's Russell Wilson money.
You know what they
Russell
should
do? Russell Wilson money.
Yeah, that's it fine. Is Russell Wilson. You know what?
Who would you trust with paying $43 million?
Sign him and then send him to St. Louis and pay the freight.
That'd a lot of great. Times, W.
Yes.
Tonight it didn't happen.
That is what is trending. Speaking of Russell Wilson, our guy Brock Huard is here to join us for his weekly visit, and what a treat. He's in studio. You're not in studio, but
no,
Brock Huard is in studio, so Brock and I get some quality one-on-one time. He joins us coming up next.
Loosen up those joints and muscles. It's time for your 7:45 stretch. Here's Schlereth and Evans with the biggest story in Denver sports.
Well, the biggest story is I got Brock Huard sitting right next to me. Stink, you're in New York. You got to be jealous right now. I got Brock here. You're
that
there.
That is a huge story. It's big time.
Yes. You know, every big time I come in studio, you know what I think, Schlereth?
What is that?
This Evans guy would look good in those nude pajamas.
Right.
Like he's not as portly, and his head is not nearly as big as you portray.
You put me in a naturally nude nightie, man.
Oh,
invitation to linger.
Naturally linger. Nude nightie with one of those big hats on. That's like, if we could just make that happen, wow. Man of my dreams.
I'm curious. I've been busting the chops of all you football people because all I've heard for weeks and weeks is that, hey, you got to get Russ under center and you got to get more of a commitment to running the football and more tight ends and really kind of simplify things.
Mm-hmm.
And they did all the stuff that you experts said they should do and they still were putrid on offense. Yeah. So what do you say now?
Yeah, and they on the road against a team that's in first place, you gave yourself a chance to win and you didn't finish. You shorten the game, which is what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to play to the strength of your team, which is your defense, and that is what running the ball does. It minimizes possessions, and it gives you a chance. And as Mike Kliss said, when you're at the 50-yard line after that explosive play to Dulcich, you're thinking, okay, here we go. Go kick a field goal and win the game. Close the door. It's over. It's over. Even if they go down and score, it's 12-10, and you know, you're going to win, and you're going to win out on the road and do something that nobody expected. I think Mike Evans predicted going into the fourth quarter of that game at the time of prime time's presser. I was listening to you pregame on my way to church. What did you say? It was going to be like, oh, I don't know, 24-6, 24-3 game in hand. It wasn't.
No.
It wasn't because they were physical, and they complemented their defense, and they shortened the game, and if they can go and finish – if Russ can hit one of those two explosive throws, if they can just get another, what does he need? The 45? Well, not the 45 or 46 or right hash or left hash. Get to the 35 and go win the game. And they could not do that.
Right? Stank?
Gosh, that was, I mean, it was beautifully expressed. And I will tell you this, going through every throw and breaking down every throw, you show me the difference, what they did in play action. And Brock's 100% right. Run the ball. They were, I think, 27 passes versus 26 runs. You know, attempts are important. But just, I mean, just in the first half alone, plus 9, plus 19, plus 5, plus 14, plus 41, plus 7 in their play action game.
Mm-hmm.
Their gun game, incomplete. Sack. Missed opportunity. I mean, there is no question. And I understand that you got to get into those situations and you've got to have some balance. But there's no question the running and the play action stuff, that's where they produced on the offensive side of the football.
Hey, do you have the Seahawks this week, Stinker?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, have we started to study them? Have we turned the page at all? Or are we still in kind of retro mode to the Broncos Sunday and everything else?
Yeah, well, I've been in the last day because I traveled out here and I've been doing TV in New York. I've been in retro mode, and Mike gives me assignments all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mike is irritated that I'm not in studio, so he gives me extra homework assignments. Yes.
But, I actually gave you one, and then I changed it midday. I said, forget about what I told you. I want to do something different.
Right. So then I had to reestablish myself in my room last night, but I have turned the page as of this morning, and I will start digging into to the Seahawks tape.
Gosh, it's just crazy. As I'm sitting in here, I think for the first time in 11 weeks in person, right when we had our fun little crosstalk, and it was at the start of the season, and there is no way. I mean, frankly, Salk and I would have lost our savings if we would have bet and said, hey, which team is going to be 7-5 and relevant in a playoff push? Which team's going to be 3-9? And I think you guys would have said, ooh, 7-5, that means some stumbles out of these Broncos. That means they just didn't hit the ground running. And instead, it's the other way around. And it is truly, Mark, it's remarkable. I mean, we had Pete on our show every Monday, and what they are doing and how they are playing complementary football in all three phases with a bad defense. It's the inverse. You guys are a tremendous defense out here. Your defense has played championship football, has given your team every opportunity to win, and the Seahawks are doing it offensively.
Is this a matter of Russ just not respecting / fearing Nathaniel Hackett like he may have looked at Pete Carroll in the past?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's, you know, we asked Pete yesterday because they beat the Rams, and the Rams played all out. It was their Super Bowl. And Bobby Wagner is out there. Wait till you watch the tape, Stink. You're going to love this. I mean, Bobby was ferocious. They're talking. They're fighting. They're scrapping. Jalen Ramsey and DK are going crazy at one another. It was just juice. And, you know, Pete said to us yesterday, like, yeah, man, that brought us back to the old days when we had a bunch of that in our practices, and there were a bunch of those alphas. So, Mike, it wasn't just Pete Carroll. It was Richard Sherman. It was Bobby Wagner. It was the others that grew up with Russell that in some cases were even older than him. And, yeah, were there articles written, and was there bitterness, and did those defensive guys not particularly love Russell all the time? Yeah. But did you need that friction? I mean, you're a small business owner, right, Stink? And I'm going to guess that a little friction every once in a while is not a bad thing in a small business, right? To have people butt heads a little bit, to get to the best solution. And you know what? If there's some sparks every once, not Drew Brees sparks, but if there's some sparks every once in a while, that's not a bad deal, is it?
No, it's not. Hey, a small business in a meeting room, you know, with your coach. Like, there needs to be some give and take, and there needs to be some at times where you stand up and say, "Boy, I just disagree with the way you guys are calling this, or the way you guys want to run this." Or, like, I understand, and I get this from a coaching perspective. I understand you put things together and you work really hard, but at some point you also have to have some of that where, as a player, you give in and you say, okay, I understand why you guys are doing this, and I get it, even though I don't like it. Even as a quarterback, you'll say, hey, man, I don't particularly like this play in the red zone, but I understand what we're trying to set up. So, you know, I'm going to try to stay away from the pitfalls of this particular play. But, you know, I'm going to run it because I understand what we're trying to do. And there's sometimes, as a player, you go, that's baloney, man. I don't like the way that works. And but you've got to have some give and take, and you got to have some productive disagreements at times, some dissidents.
Older brother Damon was in New England for two of their Super Bowls, was there with Drew and with Tom, and Damon would tell you, if he was in this seat, it was remarkable that every day Belichick put guys on edge. Brady had won multiple Super Bowls, come into practice, and he still feels an edge. You're in a team meeting room, and you still feel, hey, you can be called on at any time. You can be accountable to everybody in this room. There is that level of accountability. When Peyton came here to Denver, you tell me, was he just comfortable? Did he call all the shots? Was it Peyton Manning's world? Or was it, well, okay, I'm going to have to fit in here with Coobs and the rest of this and be a part of it? So I know that has been probably so tiring to so many of you listening to this. Like, 12 weeks, what are we doing? This is still the same record that's being played. But when this season ends, there has got to be a change, of course. When I still hear, we played it yesterday on our show in Seattle, when Russell says postgame, hey, man, I got us to 45. Like, you know, that we got to get to the 45. I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
See, I would think that this is, I'm already looking ahead to the offseason, that this would be the kind of offseason where he would have moments of self-reflection where he would understand, okay, this was bad, and I got to do some things about it. I got to get in better shape. I need to open myself up to maybe working with somebody different when it comes to refining and working on my mechanics. I mean, it is a huge offseason for me because I have played myself out of the Hall of Fame. My legacy is on the line. My career is at a crossroads. Do you see him having those moments of self-reflection doing something about it?
I'm going to guess that Mr. Penner and staff made a lot of money. When we talk about the small business, they were a big business. I think that they know very clearly this isn't working. And whenever you put a player at the center of the culture, that doesn't work. When you do it in any business, that doesn't work. So I don't think he will have any choice. Yes, he's got his contract. He's got his 3 years guaranteed, and winning means a lot, and it does. And I've told you, his son's named Wynn, his youngest son, for a reason, because that's what he did for a decade. And they're going to have to bring the right supporting cast around him in that building, QB coach, coordinator, head coach, that makes it very clear, this culture doesn't revolve around you. It revolves around us.
As a coach, I think you've got to have somebody who can come in here and say, and this is what I said, Brock, I think you've got to roll in here and say, this is what we're going to run. This is the philosophy of what we're going to run. Here's how we're going to do it. But I'm not a dictator. I'm a democracy, so I'm going to give you a vote. You can either jump on board and do it the way I'm going to do it, or you can sit on the bench. Don't you have to have somebody that's got that kind of gravitas?
Yes.
Pete Carroll,
okay.
Coach's team.
No, so compare and contrast. So you said not a dictator, and I've just heard everybody, and maybe next week we can talk about Dion. Everybody fawning, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. Oh, they're relevant. Oh, they're the greatest. Oh, Dion, I love Dion. Was Dion a dictator? He came in that room and was like, I'm coming. Right. I'm coming. It was all about Dion. I couldn't believe that there wasn't any blowback, at least from anybody, going, hold on a second. Like, we just have watched. When a QB comes in, it's like, hey, man, let's ride. It's all about me. Let's ride.
Well, yeah, but come on. College football, college basketball, the coaches are the faces of those teams.
Yes.
They do run a kingdom.
And Nick Saban does exactly what Mark just said culturally. Is it about Nick Saban? Yes. But is it a democracy if everybody buys into the process? Yes. Or you don't win. Tell me when it's been all about one guy.
Are you skeptical about Dion?
I'm a little skeptical.
Really?
I'm a little.
Well, you're the first one.
If I was in Rick George's seat, I'd hand the keys because I got no other choice.
Right.
And when you're in desperate times, it calls for desperate measures. But I'll keep a little close eye on this one, too.
Caleb Williams, real quick. Caleb Williams, you did the Pac-12 game.
Yeah.
He got hurt, unfortunately. Is this guy the next, like, real deal, the next sure thing?
He's a dude, man, and little brother's on staff there, and when you know the janitor by name and everybody in the football offices, and you've been given a couple $1 million as an NIL deal at 19, and you have that maturity to treat everybody there like gold, what you see on the field, impressive. What I hear off the field, even more impressive.
Get out of here. Thank you.
Brock Heward.
Awesome. Thanks, Brock. All right, Brock Heward joining us for his weekly chat. Brock Heward from Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports 710. He is courtesy joining us of Elite Sports Book. Before we go any further, let us do this. Go ahead, Johnny. Fire it.
Ho, 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 Denver!
All right, you just heard the jingle. Be the fourth caller right now to win a $50 gift card to Cherry Creek Shopping Center and be qualified for the grand prize of a $1,000 shopping spree thanks to Santa's Little Helpers, Stokely and Zach. 303-713-1043. Good luck. Following up on all that, the feeling of there's has to be now a change. More accountability demanded of Russ, and the idea that maybe Russ will be able to look in the mirror and realize some of that on his own. Do you see that massive change happening in the offseason?
So let me ask you, are you asking me that Russ sits down and really comes to grips with, hey, this is a Russ problem and I've got to solve it? Or do you think it's somebody else coming in and basically saying, hey, dude, you know, pay attention. Here's what we're going to do. And you need to be able to see this. Like, You think he's just going to, it's going to be an epiphany on himself, or do you think he's got to have somebody like really, really kind of change it for him?
Yeah, but in order for it to work, doesn't he have to be open to it? And well, to be open, to it, don't you have to admit it?
Yes, you have to admit it. But my I guess my question is do I think Russ is going to look critically at himself and go, yeah, this is all a me problem? Or do I think there's enough in there, well, first-time head coach, and we really weren't on the same page, and I don't really have to change. I mean, it's really not. It really wasn't on me. And not, hey, our O-line isn't quite good enough, and, you know, we had injuries to the receiver position. Like, because I know guys that have, like, they don't like to look at themselves critically. They don't like to take responsibility. And I'm not saying Russ doesn't, but I'm just saying I know people that can basically rationalize bad play away. Well, really, like, hey, man, you know, Cortland wasn't right all season long, and we lost Tim Patrick, and Jerry Jeudy was in and out of the lineup, and K.J. Hamler can't stay healthy, and we don't have a tight end that's a real separation guy, and we don't, like, oh, our line, we don't have a right tackle. Our left tackle got hurt. Our center got hurt. Like, hey, our running back got hurt. We would have been fine if all these things wouldn't have happened. So I don't have to look critically at my own game. There's excuses and there's reasons, and you can rationalize all that crap away and say, nah, we're fine. Like, that was part of the process. We'll be healthy next year, and we'll go get him next year.
If he is not the guy that you yourself have made a point to tell us from day one that he really is, that this guy is all about hard work. He's all about doing the right thing. He's all about what does it take to win, that this is a guy who wants to go down as the greatest winner ever in NFL history. I can't imagine a guy, if he actually legitimately 100% authentically stands for all those things, is going to be making all those excuses and not at some point pointing the finger at himself. He can't be the guy that he purports to be and that others say he is, and then take a look at this season and say, oh, it has nothing to do with me. He can't.
Okay.
And if he does, then he's been fooling all of us and fooling you for a decade.
Yeah. And hey, listen, maybe he has. Maybe that's the problem. I can't imagine, Mike. I can't. You put yourself in, from a career wise, you put yourself in those shoes, so to speak. You know, you look at yourself and say, where would I be right now? I can't imagine playing as poorly as Russell Wilson has played, and he has played poorly, and sit there and rationalize that play away because of injuries and everything else. He's been awful. And he admitted it a couple weeks ago where he said, I've got to be better. Now, you know, I pressed him on that in a one-on-one meeting, and you know, and he rationalized, well, he didn't rationalize away, but he gave me some, you know, garbage answer about, you know, we got to throw more touchdowns, you know. I mean, no, what do you have to do better? We've got to score more. No, I didn't ask you that. What do you have to, you, it's not a wee thing, you thing. What do you have to do better? So, I can imagine playing as poorly as he's played and still be able to get in front of that microphone and go, hey, man, it's part of the process. Hey, man, look at my calves, my cleats. This is great. You know, I'm sorry. That's foreign to me. And part of it makes my blood boil.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.